hearing portion will begin with Senate Bill 259, and we'd like to go ahead and have Sue McGlashan from our legislative fiscal explain 259, the issues relative there.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members of the subcommittee, Senate Bill 259A in growth does the following things. It reopens tax years currently closed to taxpayers claiming refund of taxes on federal retirement income attributable to employment before October 1st of 1991. Currently, tax years 1991 through 1994 are closed by the statute of limitations. It directs the Department of Revenue to not make refunds before July 1st of 1999. It establishes procedures for administering claims of deceased federal retirees and deceased federal pension beneficiaries, and it specifies that refund claim forms must be filed by April 16th, 2001. And what I've done for the subcommittee is distribute a staff measure summary from the Substantive Committee, the Senate Committee on Revenue, and also a revenue impact statement, which is in the process of being updated by the Legislative Revenue Office, and I'm told that the economists there will be bringing copies in for you so that you can get that updated, updated form, and then a fiscal impact statement prepared by the Legislative Fiscal Office, and I'll briefly go over the fiscal impact statement for you. As you can see on that, for the 1999-2001 biennium, the Department of Revenue is estimating that the cost of this legislation will be $84,909 in general funds and 1.23 FTE, and in the 2003 biennium, cost of $71,606 in general funds and a 0.26 FTE public service representative. And the Department of Revenue estimates that this bill will result in an issuance of 120,000 refunds to 30,000 retirees, and the expenditures reflected in the fiscal impact include correspondence with taxpayers, hearings for refunds that will be appealed, mailing certain tax forms such as the 1099-D, and then for additional temporary staff to process refunds and answer inquiries. And Jamie's distributing for you right now the updated revenue impact of Senate Bill 259A.
Chair, we've heard the legislative fiscal. Senator Stroh is recognized.
Just a couple questions. One of the things it does, it opens this refund up to those who did not make a formal application so they can apply and they can receive what money is owed to them. The other thing is about the timing, and the timing is such that they do that in the next biennium rather than in this biennium, is that it? So that if they would do it in this biennium, we could pay up front the money and it would have effect then upon our revenues, and perhaps the kicker wouldn't kick and things like that. But they're not doing it that way. They're having it become effective in the next biennium, so it will not have any effect on the kicker. Is that the way it works, Sue?
Mr. Chair and Senator Trow, that's my understanding, and Ed Waters from the Legislative Revenue Office is here, and he can address that for you in more detail if you like.
Okay. And then the cost is purely that we see here in the fiscal impact. It's not the cost of paying back those who are owed the money, but it's the cost of administering the program. That's the cost we see here. Okay. And we're going to spend general fund dollars to do that according to the bill. Is that right?
Senator Trow, the cost to the department would be funded with general fund. That's correct.
Okay. I wonder, Mr. Chair, if you were able to find in the Department of Revenue a fund of money, a pocket of money that might be used for these expenses as well as going to the counties. I wonder if we thought about funding this internally by tapping into that $17 million fund that's there in the senior tax deferral program. So we don't have to hit the general fund.
Right. we are working into that fund somewhat because there were some excess funds there,
mm-hmm.
and we'll have to come back and Sue, had you relative to the budget for the State Department of Revenue, had you estimated the impact? Are they going to absorb, be able to absorb the $84,909?
Mr. Chair, this measure is not anticipated in either the governor's budget or in the legislative fiscal office recommendations. And as I've done in the past, what I would recommend is that the department, once various bills this session has passed and those bills affect their budget, that they determine the net effect and then, if necessary, come back to the emergency board to request additional funding if they cannot afford the additional expenditures in their budget.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, since, you know, we have found that there is within the department a fund that's not being used, I would hope that we at least would think about the possibility of not having another drain on the general fund with this small expenditure. I don't know whether we're free to suggest that we begin this immediately so that it also would have a positive effect on the kicker, but if I had my wishes, I'd do that.
Are the amounts sufficiently determined that the amounts could be paid out on an immediate basis, or is the July 1st, 1999 a date set that allows for the actual determination of the benefits to be received under this most recent low phase?
Mr. Chair, I think I'd like to ask Ed at this point to come up and speak to this issue, if I might, because he will have a lot more detail than I could provide.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Ed Waters, Legislative Revenue Office. It's the $107 million revenue impact for the 9901 biennium doesn't in no way, I guess, presumes that that money would not be able to be paid before that time. Perhaps the Department of Revenue can speak to that, but as far as I understand, there's no reason why that money could not be paid until, or would not need to be paid until after that time.
We have the money. As soon as we got the application filled out, we could write the checks and send the refund. Is that what you're saying?
Basically, I think the applications have been received for the most part. The procedure has been geared up, and all that would be required is that the authorization by this body and the legislature be given to do that.
Thank you. Mr. Chair.
Rich Sandler is recognized.
Ed, just so I understood, you said there's no reason that we couldn't pay before July 1st?
Representative Leonard, members of the committee, that is my understanding. I think we have representatives from the Department of Revenue who can speak to the administrative details of that.
But it says no refunds may be paid under this section part of July 199.
Representative Leonard, that's right. Under the language in the bill, the 259A gross bill, those payments could not be authorized until after the beginning of the next biennium.
Well, I guess I'm missing something. I hear you saying two times.
let me start over, Representative Leonard. As far as I understand, technically, administratively, there would be no reason why some or all of those refunds could not be
for that language.
But for that language in the current bill.
Representative Hansen is recognized.
Are these refunds currently accruing interest?
Representative Hansen, that is correct. Roughly to the tune of $750,000 per month.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Susan Browning, with Department of Revenue, and I just wanted to echo what Mr. Waters has said. The process we followed is basically we have all of those refunds that we can pay out now that we have authority to do so. We've paid those, and we would need legislative authority to pay the others. So we have asked those that did not file a protected claim to go ahead and send in their forms. So we've just been gathering their forms, and we've been processing them, basically, and we've been saving it on tape. So when you give us the authority and have the funding available, we can just start sending out the checks, and we can do that within probably about a 2 or 3 week period. So we have added, we've shifted our priorities to make sure that we can have those ready, and we expect we can have them turned, the bulk of them turned around by the end of the biennium, if that was your choice. But obviously it's a funding issue that's in your authority and your decision.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. Senator Troll is recognized.
If we did this immediately, it seems to me that we could, it would be more cost effective if we're ready to do it because of the interest we have to pay on these things. Do you have any idea of how much interest we would have to pay if we waited until the next biennium to do this?
Senator Troll, Mayor of the City. The CHIP is about $750,000 per month, mm-hmm. forward or backward. I wouldn't expect that this amount would change very much if payments were made before the end of this current biennium. It's referring to $107 million. That amount was calculated basically as of the middle of June or the middle of July, basically.
I'm not quite understanding you. You're saying that so much a month of interest that we're paying would just simply, for as long as it took to get it paid, that bill would add up each month, the amount of interest?
Senator Cho, that's correct. The interest accrues until the check is actually cut mm-hmm. and mailed to the refundee.
Okay.
I guess I'm saying that $107 million is fairly rough, but it assumes that the payments are made between about the middle of June this year and the middle of July.
We could reduce that amount if we paid immediately.
Senator, that's correct. The interest amount would be reduced. I can't say that $107 million estimate would be reduced very much because it's kind of an average.
Okay.
Certainly, you could say that. If
I wonder
later,
before we have final action, it's got to go through the full Ways and Means Committee. Has this bill been in the Senate Revenue Committee?
I think that's correct.
Yeah. Okay. And didn't you get asked this question when it was there, or somebody did?
Yes, I think that's correct.
So how much total would it be, the difference, if we paid it immediately?
Senator, so at most $1 million less than $107 million. So at most $106
million. Let's
just
say
that. Okay,
right. Thank you.
I have a procedural question from a standpoint of the passage of a bill, and perhaps Mr. McGlashan could help us with this. We have a legislative fiscal officer for the state with us today, Mr. Mike Simpson. If we proceed with the passage of the fiscal portion of Senate Bill 259, what is the timing for the emergency clause to kick in as soon as it possibly can kick in? In other words, if we move down as fast as we possibly could, the soonest that it could be paid would be as soon as it's turned into law under an emergency clause. Is that correct? Does the bill have an emergency clause?
Okay. That's a specific date. It wouldn't have an emergency clause.
If you look at, I'm sorry,
Section 4. And by declaring the emergency, then we don't have to wait the standard 90 days, but after the time of signature, but we could proceeds to begin to pay immediately upon the final signature. Now, it would still have to go through the House.
Mr. Chair, except to the extent that if the bill is passed in this form, the Department of Revenue is directed not to pay any refunds before July 1st.
Yes, that's been back to the Senate. And basically, of course, that would be a substantive change as well.
If you chose to change that date. Then.
Mr. Chair, if I may, the reason the Department, for the record, Susan Browning, the reason the Department requested the emergency clause remain on there, even though the direction was to not make the refunds before July 1st, 1999, is because of the second provision of Senate Bill 259 that provides a streamlined process for beneficiaries of estates. And that piece could be effective upon signing, as I understand it. And that would help the beneficiaries of estates that are closed. So the process right now is not available for them to without some fairly complicated process to get their refunds of their deceased retiree. So that process could go ahead, even though we were waiting on the refunds for the other closed year.
And the streamlining process is accounted for in the bill itself, then?
Mr. Chair, yes, that's the Section 3 of Senate Bill 259. It's the two provisions, the opening up of the closed years and then the provision to allow a streamlined process for beneficiaries, because currently they're in a little bit of a problem if their estate is closed.
So that would give them time to reopen their estates and begin the necessary judicial process in that process in order to open their estates and in order to accept the money and then redistribute the money based upon the finalization of their estates for the final disposition.
Mr. Chair, actually what Senate Bill 259 is just provides a process that they can file a claim for refund without requiring the disclosed estate to reopen. So it would outline for those people who are beneficiaries, here's the process. Go ahead and follow this and they can go ahead and get everything underway.
Generally from the Department of Revenue, Ms. Browning, is that well understood by, I know that you have a publication program that you have a good distribution, dissemination of information. Does that seem to be well understood that there's not, that there's a fast-tracking of this information?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, yes, I believe so. We've been working very closely with the retiree group, and that's something that they're very concerned about is the process for, because some of these go back to 1991, so some of the retirees have since deceased. And so there are quite a few beneficiaries that are waiting for their refunds, and since it's so long ago, the estate could be closed. So this is something that's very important to them. And it's also part of the agreement, negotiated agreement that was arranged through this whole court process. So I believe they're quite up to speed with it on what the process is on that piece of it. They have been keeping up with it pretty quickly. Well, we've also been communicating with them directly to make sure that they're on board with this.
Okay. Let's see, relative to, we really probably ought to have a public hearing opened at the same time relative to 260, Senate Bill 260, so that we can actually hear some of the issues relative to 260 at the same time. We probably ought to go ahead and do that now. Leaving both issues on the table, Senate Bill 259 and 260. So let's go ahead and open a joining hearing of Senate Bill 260 and discuss the merits of that particular bill. We'll ask Sue McGlashan, representing our legislative fiscal office, to go ahead and explain 260.
Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, for your information, I've distributed a staff measure summary on Senate Bill 260A and growth. You also have a copy of that bill, and then you have a copy of our fiscal impact statement from the Legislative Fiscal Office. And basically what Senate Bill 260 does is establishes the subtraction from taxable income relating to certain federal pension income. It also excludes federal pension income tax refunds from federal adjusted gross income for purposes of eligibility for Oregon senior citizens' property tax deferral program. And finally, it allows the department to cancel an assessment of personal income tax imposed on certain federal pension income. And in regards to this last amount, the department estimates that will have a minimal impact on their processes and procedures, and they believe that they can absorb any additional work by existing staff.
Okay, let's go ahead then, and I'd like to have both Mr. Waters and Ms. Browning issues relative to the public hearing portion of Senate Bill 260 with us.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Susan Browning with the Department of Revenue. We talked a little bit about Senate Bill 259 already. The two major provisions are that, opening the closed years, and then allowing the process for the retirees working through beneficiaries. Some of those years are some are closed and some are still open. So I want to make sure that as we discuss that, I realize perhaps that wasn't as clear as it possibly could be, because the emergency clause applies to the whole bill. But as it relates to beneficiaries, some of the beneficiary years are open. They're open for our purposes, but for the beneficiary, the state may be closed or there may be some problems. So that would allow us to go ahead and get the beneficiary's claims in and go ahead and pay those, because the July 1st, 1999 provision applies to the closed years only. So I want to be real clear, specific about that.
So 1994, 5, or let's see, 1995, 96, 97, and now the filing of 98, those are the open years unless they have previously filed the special claim form. And so the effect of Senate Bill 260 is to go ahead and extend for those retirees or their heirs under the federal retirement mandatory payout. Now, my understanding is further that much of the provisions of what we see is not only just portion contained within the language of Senate Bills 259 and 260, but it also is contained within the language of the litigation, the last set of litigation, which is Vogel versus Department of Revenue of the State of Oregon.
Department of Revenue, State of Oregon, et al.
Okay.
That's correct, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. As part of the settlement that was approved January 7, 1999 by the Oregon Tax Court Judge in the Vogel case, the state agreed to pursue the legislation that you see in 259, Senate Bill 259 and 260, that would open the closed years and allow retirees to allow us to make refunds if a form is filed with the department on or before April 16, 2001. And then also have an expedited process for filing the claims for the beneficiary. So that's all part of the actual agreement we have with the state and the plaintiffs, the retirees and their attorneys, and that was negotiated and was approved. So we're under pretty strict direction from this agreement as to what we're to seek, and that's why we're here with the bill and my department sponsoring it.
Okay. So really we're the substantive portion of it, which begins the payment beginning July 1st of 1999, and the fiscal impact, as has been presented to us by Mr. Waters, that substantive portion was basically already agreed to, and was part of the decree under Vogel versus the State of Oregon.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the July 1st, 1999 date for the state no refund shall be paid prior to July 1st, 1999 for the closed year. That was amendment. That the Senate Revenue Committee put in the Senate Bill 259.
I see.
The original bill did not have a date. We just said that we need this authority to pay the closed years, and it's your authority and your discretion to decide and to direct us when to pay that.
But the closed years were part of the Vogel decision. That demand was part of that. Senator Trill is recognized.
That's the point. I think I was searching for, and that was when the decision was made for the effective date when we started basically paying out the money. And that was an amendment, you said, that was put in on the Revenue Committee. And you would be prepared to do it immediately, but the Revenue Committee decided it would be delayed and done later.
Mr. Chair, Senator Trill, the Department of Revenue has tried to position itself so it could mail out as many of these refunds for the openers as possible, and we have that pretty much done now.
Mm-hmm.
We also tried to position ourselves to be ready to send out the remaining ones for the closed years and for the beneficiaries whenever the legislature directs us to do that. So we believe we can do that by the end of the biennium. We have quite a few of them run already waiting,
mm-hmm.
But by the end of the biennium, we'll be able to turn them all around.
Mm-hmm.
But again, that depends on your direction on when you would like us to do that.
When you get started.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Depending on the budget issues that
could
be addressing.
Let's see, Senator Russell Leonard recognized?
Just a rough calculation. It looks to me like the interest charge on the $107 million, if you could verify this for me, would be just under $1 million a month. That's pretty close.
Mr. Chair, Representative Leonard, I believe Mr. Waters said $750,000 a month.
Representative Leonard, it works out to, that's 9% a year,
mm-hmm.
divided by 12,
mm-hmm.
which is your monthly rate.
Mm-hmm.
So it's between $750,000 and a million.
Mm-hmm.
If the principal is $107 million, then you're correct.
Right. So every month they pay sooner, it's over $1 million.
Is that calculated on a daily basis? Mr. Waters, or doesn't the Department of Revenue calculate that on a 15-day basis each 15 days, or is it actually daily now?
Mr. Chair, it's actually daily.
Yeah, so it's calculated in daily calculation.
Mm-hmm. So we calculate the interest that's due the retiree and the refund on a daily basis.
So the day you cut the check, is the day in effect the interest stops?
Right.
Okay. Are there further questions relative to as we're having the public hearing session, a portion of the both joining together 260 and 259, Senate Bill 260 and 259?
If I may, Mr. Chair, I'll briefly go through Senate Bill 260 as well. I handed out a little summary of that from the department that we used with the Senate Revenue Committee. Senate Bill 260 is really outlined in the agreement with the plaintiffs and retirees as well, and you have direction on that. Basically, this is the forward piece of it that moves the states that are subtraction for federal pension income. Since it's no longer taxable, we have to have a subtraction for federal pension income for tax years 1998 and later. So this is the forward piece. There's no revenue impact. There's no fiscal impact from this piece. But it basically puts it into effect and moves it forward so that we can resolve the issue, and that's part of the agreement as well. And that's in Section 1 of Senate Bill 260. Section 2 just states that it's taxes beginning on or after January 1st of 98. And then Section 3 says also that departments can cancel tax assessments if they were based on federal pension income. Because if the federal pension income is no longer taxable, we need some kind of a mechanism to cancel those tax assessments, and we don't have that authority right now. So that would give us the authority to do that as well. And then Section 4 just defines what federal pension is. And then on Section 5 is an amendment that came out of Senate Revenue as well. And there was just a concern raised that these refunds could potentially jeopardize some individuals who are currently participating in a senior citizen deferral program, because that does have an income threshold of eligibility. And because these refunds can be quite large for some individuals, if they get this one-time refund, it may throw them out of the senior deferral program. And that was not the intent. And there was interest in Senate Revenue to make sure that that didn't happen. So Section 5 was an amendment that was put in on Senate Revenue as well to state basically that these refunds wouldn't be included in the federal adjusted gross income when you determine whether or not you can continue to participate in the senior property tax control. So Senate Bill 260, in essence, is just a forward piece of it. It doesn't have any refund provisions or anything. It's just putting it into law and moving forward.
Okay, Mr. Chair.
Senator Lem is recognized.
Thank you very much. Do you have any idea how much this average check that's running through the entirety. Maybe is there any difference between the federal and the state also?
Mr. Chair, Senator Lynn, we just actually did some runs of data information that we were pulling out of. As I mentioned, we think we're pretty much done with the open years, the years that we can issue refunds. We're going to be issuing about a little over $200 million to about 122,000 checks. And the problem with that is that each year is a different check. But each year, the check is averaging about $1,640. So if the person is in here 91-90 through the whole process that they've got a protective claim in, they could be getting several years and $1,600 per year. So it's a sizable amount for a lot of people.
With the interest.
With the interest. Right. So that's why the concern came up about the property tax deferral program, because that could be enough to throw somebody over the income limit as well. But that's for those years where the individuals had, the years were either open or they filed protective claims. There's some thought that future years may be lower because people who had larger amounts coming in may have had more incentive and interest in getting their protected claim in, but that's a little bit of speculation, but that's probably about the average.
Sure.
Senator Crowe is right.
How much of that average of 1600 and something is interest, and how much of it is payment of the principal?
For the Mr. Chair, Senator Crowe, for these years that we've already paid, the open years, about $155 million is the refund amount, and about $44, $45 million is interest.
Wow. So the interest keeps you rolling up.
So the interest so far on this group is about 25% of the total.
Okay. But it'll be more on the later group. There's just longer. We're delaying and not paying this time.
One more question.
Representative Senator Lamb.
Okay. The interest, did you say 9%?
Mr. Chair, Senator Lynn, it averages 9%. It depends. The interest rate changes a little bit from year to year, depending on whether it goes up or down. It's averaging about 9%. We took an average amount, but that's
right. When I go pay check the same time that the state government charges me 12% interest, it should be nearly from the same thing, 12% instead of 9%.
Mr. Chair, Senator Lynn. The interest rate for the Department of Revenue pays is actually set in statute. So we look at it and compare it to what the IRS is actually charging for interest.
Okay.
It's actually paying out for interest, and we adjust it based on that. So that's why I adjust a little bit every year. So the older years, it might have been a higher rate because the interest in the past, you know, when the credit cards were so high and the interest rates were so high, was higher. But we're using an average of 9% to keep this pretty simple because it is from 91 through 97 now. So lots of years on the table.
Thank you.
The $1,600 figure, can you give me that figure again? I'm sorry.
We have about $200 million total, and the average is about $1,640. That's the data as of today.
And that's per year?
That's per year, right. And that represents almost about 122,000 years. Because of the way our system works, taxpayers are getting a separate check for each year.
$1,640 refund per year.
Per year. And then individuals oftentimes are getting multiple years.
And that would be back to October of 91 would be the first check in effect, October of 91 through December of 91, and then 92, 93, 94 under the extended statute. And for those people who had filed the claims, and then 95, 96, 97, and the case was decided in 1998, so we've already accommodated for that, haven't we, within the department?
Mr. Chair, that's why we need Senate Bill 260. Senate Bill 260 puts it into effect in the law, so for 1998, filed tax year 1998, which you'll be paying in 1999, by April 15, 1999. We need Senate Bill 260 to fix this so we wouldn't be in this predicament again another year. The numbers you can really see, for instance, the ones for 1991, we issued about 9,900 checks. and it ranged from about 9,000 to about 11,000 for the 91 to 94 years, and then it really jumps up for 95. You get about 26,000. 96, we issued 28,000. 97, we issued 29,000 checks. You can really see that that's the 91 to 94, there are people who don't have their protected claims, and you can see the difference in numbers there.
As a practical matter, what can you tell us about 1998? Did the majority of the filers go ahead and take into consideration Vogel versus the state of Oregon, or do we have a fix on that, Ms. Brown?
Mr. Chair, we did a lot of communication through the retiree groups, through our website, group publications, through the tax practitioners, asking people to take that into account when they have their estimated tax payments so that they will be, because we were prepared for the Senate Bill 260 to pass, so come January 1st, 1998, that tax year, they need to be having the estimated tax paid correctly so that they're all ready to go. And I think the majority of the retirees are pretty well set based on the questions and calls we've got. I think the retiree group has done an excellent, excellent job communicating with their members and trying to get the word out and helping us on that piece. So.
Okay. Let me see if I can summarize all that I know about this particular point. And with regard to Senate Bill 260, basically what it does is it not only opens the statute of limitations back to the October of 91, but then it also fixes in statute the issue of the Vogel case against the state of Oregon, so that beginning that retroactively to 91, and then from that point forward, including 1998 and years thereafter, then the federal retiree issue is all accommodated and taken care of. And then, and that's taken care of in Senate Bill 260. And then 259, Senate Bill 259, then goes ahead and allows for the expenditure to be made on behalf of the Department of Revenue to go ahead and to accommodate the staff necessary to make the payments, and then to actually authorize the amount which to be paid. Let's see, which is approximately, if I read correctly, the background summary on the revenue impact for 1997 through 99, refunds for open years and protected claims already filed, $184 million, and then reduced collections for 1998-2001, which we've already experienced, and in part, the 1998 has already been experienced. Is that correct? 1998 would have already been...
Yeah, Mr. Chair, right. We start experiencing the reduced collections from that.
Okay. All right.
98.
And then in 99 through 2001, for that biennium, the amount would be an $81 million reduction in revenues, approximately $40 million per year.
Mr. Chair, that's correct. And that'd be reduced collections only.
And that goes on from that point forward for all of the retirees who began to receive their retirement prior to October of 1991 under the Michigan Davis v. Michigan case. Is that correct?
Right, Mr. Chair. Because of Senate Bill 260, if that's approved, that will provide the subtraction of all federal pension income attributable to service prior to October 1st, 91. So you're correct. That $81 million per biennium reduction will carry forward into the future because that will be a subtraction for that. So that's an ongoing reduction in collections piece.
I just have one follow-up question then. This has been going on for a long, long time. And by going ahead and refunding, as is demanded under the Vogel case, by refunding the amounts that we're talking about, have we created a new set of taxpayers? Because that's what each time, each of the various cases has created for us. By taxing attacking the state employees, we violated a contract. By refunding to the state employees, we created a new set of taxpayers by paying by coming back and modifying a portion of the payments. We created a new set of taxpayers. What I need to know that there's an end to this at some particular point. Do we have are there pending issues now or that we should be aware of?
Mr. Chair, I'm not an attorney. The department totally agrees with you. This has been a very, very complex issue. The Vogel decision was based on the fact that the federal retirees, they found, must be granted a benefit that's equal to state retirees. That's why we are where we are right now. Whether other future issues come up, I don't know. The Vogel agreement was designed to resolve an issue as relates to the federal retirees.
But
I can't make any assurances because I don't know if anybody can at this point, really, whether there's other issues that could be like with private pensions or something down the road.
And I guess that's what concerns me now is that basically what the Vogel versus the State of Oregon Department of Revenue does is it brings back equity between the federal and the state retirees, and it's my understanding that as finally entered into, there was equity entered into there between the state and the federal. But the other non-public retirees, whether they were federal retirees or state retirees, that still remains an issue or could remain an issue at that particular point if they thought that somehow they had been now discriminated against and we've got a new set of taxpayers who have an issue.
Mr. Chair, that's beyond the scope of my expertise, unfortunately. I know with the agreement we have in Vogel, it does take care of the one piece, and that's basically about as far as I can say, and maybe your legal counsel could guide you more on that.
So. Was a discussion in the Senate in the passage of Senate Bills 259 and 260 before they were referred to Ways and Means about the potential of that as becoming an issue at some particular point?
Sure. I don't recall that. Maybe Mr. Waters. Mr. Waters is a staff person for the legislative revenue, for Senate revenue, so perhaps he recalls the question.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, there wasn't discussion to that effect in the context of those two bills. However, there is another bill in Senate, Senate Bill 7, which would effectively grant similar, I'd like to say equivalent, but at least similar treatment for private pensioners as Senate Bill 259 and 260 grant federal retirees. So that's another issue that's not connected directly to either of these two bills. But
Mr. Waters, do you know the fiscal impact of that particular, or do you have any feel for the fiscal impact for that particular piece of legislation?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, not directly offhand. There were several different amendments which treated things a little bit differently and had different revenue impacts depending on which one was under consideration and adopted. I didn't work directly on that bill, but I could look that up and find it out for the committee.
Okay. I'd appreciate knowing what that is because undoubtedly some will feel that and that's what have spawned the series of, I think we're up to about 9 different sets of litigation, whether they've been resolved or unresolved at this particular point. We just seem to keep opening up another door and it just gets curiouser and curiouser as we go along.
Mr. Chair, there was quite a discussion in the Senate Revenue Committee. The staff person for this bill, Diesel, presented a nice summary of the history of the different retirement issues that could probably be provided to you, so that's useful. It was more a discussion of how we got where we are today, and that was the discussion of it. And what do these two bills accomplish in affirming the agreement and turning it out?
Mr. Chair?
Representative Hansen is recognized.
Well, basically, thinking back to getting back to where we are today on 260 and 259, under the terms of the agreements that the states entered into, is there anything discretionary that we can do with these two pieces of legislation other than the starting date?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, no. The provisions in Senate Bill 259 and 260 have been agreed by both the state attorneys from the state, represented by the Attorney General's office, and by the plaintiffs. So they went over these with kind of a magnifying glass and a fine-tooth comb and have got agreement on the exact wording in 259 and 260. So the one, this big discretionary item that you have is the starting date on when you'd like us to start issuance of closed years, and that's totally in your hands. We want to make sure we're ready whenever you want us to go forward. That is your call and your choice based on the budget.
But this particular point, the substantive portion of the bill that's provided to us says it will start no later than July 1st of
1999. Mr. Chair, we're direct that the refunds cannot be issued before July 1st, 1999. That's correct.
But that wasn't covered as part of the agreement that was added by the Senate.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, under the agreement, it states that there's an ending date when the payments need to be made. Let me see the slides here. All claims must be paid by no later than June 30th, 2003, the deadline for final payment. So that's what the agreement actually says. It says, depending on where the state's budget may be, they recognize that it may be impossible to pay all of this immediately. But they gave an ending date of June 30th, 2003, for the final payment.
Okay. And thus,
for those closed years.
Okay. So June 30th, 2003,
right.
So technically, if they felt in the Senate committee that there was not sufficient resources, they could have spread it out over into a complete additional biennium in addition to the current biennium that we're presently budgeting for them.
Mr. Chair, that's correct. It could be, if you felt that the dollars were not available and adequate, under the agreement, it could be carried forward into 2001-2002.
There's no suspension of the interest, though.
Mr. Chair, Senator Charles, the interest would continue to accrue. And that's part of the agreement as well.
And that's the problem with delaying it for any length of time. It's not cost-effective to do that.
Okay. Are there other questions that need to be? I appreciate Mr. Waters and Ms. Browning. I know that I had to had a group of the National Association of Federal Retirees approach me and among my constituency and ask me to go through a history of the Davis versus Michigan. All the way through the Ragsdale cases and one and two and those kinds of things prior to my arrival here in Salem, when I had just a grand old time going back and doing some research, and I'm grateful for the Department of Revenue for the good job you've done in being able to keep practitioners informed as to what's happened and actually I have a HIP site. Have you counted the HIPs on your sites on the network that you get on that particular issue?
Mr. Chair, I don't have those numbers with me, but I'm sure we have. The federal retirees have been great active on the website. They've really found that a good way, an efficient way. Actually, it's been a pretty efficient way for the department to communicate with them and get the latest information out to keep them sure that we are trying to seek a solution, and I know you are as well.
Are there other questions that we need to ask at this particular point? I'm going to go ahead and go into recess for a few moments before we go into a work session then. And Mr. Krupp, Representative Krupp, is not with us today. We really should have a full complement before we go in and open up work session with regard to Senate Bill. Let's see, we're scheduled for 259 first. Let's go ahead and open up for 259.
Okay.
Representative Leonard is recognized.
Sure. I'm going to, on line 13 of Senate Bill 259, move to delete the word no, delete the word may, and in between the word refunds and B, insert the word shall.
So on line 13, your proposal is to amend line 13 to read no refunds.
Okay. No.
I'm sorry.
On line 13, delete the word no.
Oh.
Delete the word may, third word in. And in place of may, insert the word shall.
Wow.
So the line would read, refunds shall be paid under this section prior to July 1, 1999.
Mr. Chairman, point of order?
Yes, Senator Farrell is recognized.
Thank you. Do you have a memorandum prohibiting us from doing amendments in concept in consideration of deliberations in the committee? I think we had a memo recently that indicated that any changes would have to be engrossed. In substance or substantive changes to a bill without by a conceptual amendment.
I'm not sure. I haven't seen a memo, but I'm familiar with the committee rules in the House rules, neither of which require.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Lewis is recognized.
Yes, I worked on the House Management Advisory Work Group during the interim, which was completely bipartisan. At the request of the Chief Clerk of the House, the Speaker appointed folks to that Management Advisory Work Group. And one of the things we made very clear coming out of that Management Advisory Work Group is that we should not be doing conceptual amendments. It really slows down the system and makes a big problem to do conceptual amendments. And I know that our Chief Clerk, I don't know about the Senate side, but I know our Chief Clerk is very much opposed to bills being amended conceptually. And has been trying to keep committee chairs from allowing that to occur in their committee. But I would like to just speak to the substance of Representative Leonard's amendment. This would have an effect on the kicker refund for the people of the state of Oregon, and therefore I would oppose Representative Leonard's amendment. So if the chair chooses to go ahead and have us vote on it, I would oppose the amendment.
And Mr. Chair, normally when one makes a motion, they're allowed to speak to the motion before they debate. And I'd appreciate it if there's some procedural question, I can address that.
Well, the procedural question was whether or not the conceptual amendment would be allowed under our current rules as we're presently standing.
And I have the rules here, and our rules don't require written amendments. The one rule that speaks to amendments in committee is Rule 8.22, Limitation on Committee Amendments, and it says, whenever a measure has a subsequent referral to the Ways and Means Committee or the Revenue Committee, neither of those committees shall propose to amend the measure in a manner that affects the substance with any other than a revenue impact, which has a revenue impact, and therefore is allowed under our rules.
Other than, and I guess I'm having a little problem with that, Representative Co-Chair Lewis is recognized.
Mr. Simpson just whispered to me that it's okay in sub to make conceptual amendments, that we don't do that in full committee. So it is okay, I would wish us to go ahead and vote on this amendment today.
Okay. Okay. So, Representative Leonard, would you like to then go ahead and speak to your proposed conceptual amendment?
I would. Thank you, Mr. Chair. The purpose of this amendment is that every day costs Oregonians about $33,000 in interest so they don't pay this debt, and to actually, in statute, limit the ability to pay this off early can cost Oregonians as much as $2 million by the time we pay this off. I think that to be a frivolous waste of a taxpayer's dollar, and consider this to be an amendment that is in keeping with a good fiscal policy.
And speaking to that, you recognize, of course, that when we make this conceptual amendment, that we would have to go back, the bill would have to go back to the Senate to go back to the entire process again?
Well, Mr. Chair, this is a joint committee, and it could come out of this committee to both floors because we have the Senate representative.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Farioli is recognized.
The manager summary, I think, has some details that inform us of how the discussions and how the deliberations were made. And under issues discussed, the committee discussed how the timing of the refund might impact the surplus of the current biennium and revenues in the first future biennium. That's in the center of the measure summary on the first page, right in the center under issues discussed. And on the attached page, revenue impact, the revenue sustainable 259A would reduce general fund revenue by about $107 million. And those decisions were decisions that were made after significant deliberation by the co-chairs of the budget committee and by the members of the leadership team in the local Senate of the House. The effects of amendments would overturn the deliberations that brought this bill to our revenue committee. We're here, I believe, to consider the effects on the fiscal analysis sheet of the proposed legislation, which is in the order of $84,000 on the 99-2001 biennium and $71,600 on the 2001-2003 biennium. So I would suggest that the in substance or conceptual amendment of the Senate Bill 259A engrossed is well-intentioned, but really directly in opposition of the discussions and deliberations that brought the bill in its present form to this committee. And I think our proper purview is not the entire budget of the legislative assembly, but rather the fiscal effects of Senate Bill 259, which are detailed on the fiscal sheet, which is provided by the legislative fiscal office. And if you don't have it, it's the 259 budget sheet that came with the document. So I suggest that rather than considering $107 million effect, we're here to look at an $84,000 question of cost.
Thank you, Senator Farioli. Senator Crow is recognized.
I appreciate those comments, but I respectfully disagree with what our responsibilities are. We're a Ways and Means Committee, a fiscal committee. We're trying to find ways of balancing a budget that's short of money. And what we see here is a way of refunding this money, which is not cost effective, and by making the change that Representative Leonard has suggested, we can save the state at least a couple million dollars. And can get out to these folks who want their refunds and want them timely and want them now, those refunds almost immediately. The department's ready to do that. So why the delay? The delay is for political reasons, for reasons of sending a kicker back, and that's the only reason that we're having this delay. And what we're saying is that doesn't make sense. It makes sense to save money now and make these payments now.
Thank you, Senator. So I would call our attention to the fact that that any amount of money which the state presently has pending payment of the amounts, the underlying amounts, relative to the Vogel matter, are in fact invested and are making us are making a return on investment at this particular point. So perhaps there is a gross savings, but there's also a net dollar amount to be considered. So, and I'm sure that recognizing the fiscal prowess the rather substantial fiscal prowess, I might add, of Treasurer Hill of the Treasurer of the State, that he's not allowing any portion of the principal and interest to sit idle. As a matter of fact, he's drawing interest income and interest revenue on a daily basis on both the principal as well as the interest, and so there is a serious question whether or not what the savings amount will be in the dollars that are involved.
Mr. Chairman, do you want to delay it even further? I was going to suggest let's delay it 2 years.
That'll
get us out of our financial black hole.
Are you amending your motion relative to line 13?
We'll see how it goes.
Okay, one at a time.
We have before us then a conceptual amendment relative to Senate Bill 259, line 13. Representative Leonard recommends a change in language under Section 2, Line 3, which is Section 2, Subsection 3, Line 13, which would read, refund shall be paid under this section prior to July 1st, 1999. Let's go ahead by roll count, and take a roll count. Those who are in favor of this conceptual amendment would answer aye.
No.
Leonard?
Aye.
Hanson?
Aye.
Lewis?
No.
Butler?
No.
Crow?
Aye.
Lynn?
No.
Carioli?
No.
Okay. The conceptual amendment as proffered and proposed by Representative Leonard is defeated. Representative Lewis, Co-Chair Lewis is recognized.
I would move Senate Bill 259 A and Gross to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
It's been proposed by Representative and Co-Chair Lewis that Senate Bill 259 be moved to the full Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Are there any objections to that?
I'm going to object and let's explain why. Are we going to roll call or what?
Would you like to go ahead and explain your objection?
I support the payment. I don't support wasting Oregon taxpayer dollars by delaying the payment.
Okay. Senator Crow is recognized.
And with the same rationale.
Okay. Thank you. Other comments or suggestions? Representative Hanson.
Well, very, very similar, the same rationale, although I think there's another one. Before we get out of this session, there's going to have to be some give. We're currently moving towards a deadlock that we could be here until the first snow. By locking this in at this point with this sum of money, I think it dramatically cuts the flexibility that we could have. If the whole bill wasn't in front of us, I'd propose a different amendment, which would again delete the no, leaving the may in place, which would allow flexibility maybe to get out of this building before the snow flies. But still same reservations, and I guess it'll be the same vote, so we can move on.
Okay, let's move forward. Then other comments or questions? The motion before us now then is that we go ahead with a due pass recommendation of Senate Bill 259 as presented to us, with the effect on the expenditures from general funds totaling for the 1999-2001 biennium estimated to be $84,909 and the 2001-2003 biennium $71,606. We'll go ahead and take that by voice roll call.
Aye.
Leonard?
No.
Hanson?
No.
Lewis?
Aye.
Butler?
Aye.
Crow?
No.
Lynn?
Aye.
Aye.
Sure.
Be it noted for the record then that Senate Bill 259 passes to the full Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation.
Sure.
Senator Cho is recognized.
This is not exactly a vote explanation. It's sort of a desire, and that is that I hope we find a way that the administrative cost of doing this is
not another general fund liability, that we find a way to do this without taxing the general fund to do it.
Thank you, Senator Troll. And I think that in that regard, I'm very impressed with the testimony of Mick Browning in that it doesn't sound like they're going to wait until the next biennium to start making the calculations. As soon as we get this passed the full Ways and Means, I'm going to guess that there's probably going to be some predated checks pretty much cut effective July 1st, 1999. The dollar amount will absolutely be known. And I want you to have this assurance from me that I know, and having met with the co-chairs, that they know exactly the amount that they're working with within the dollar parameters, the dollar limitation. We're still waiting for the May 14th forecast, but they have a pretty good feel for exactly how much that will be and feel like that they know.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Lem is recognized.
I'd like to make a comment on this, even though it's past line 13. I appreciate the concept, but to me, this is a substantial change, and this should be discussed and needs to be changed at the revenue committee, not our subcommittee. That's my view.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Senator Lem. Well taken, well put. Senator Farrelly?
A comment, Mr. Chairman, if I might. There's no secret about the differences in philosophies between members of other parties or different parties with regard to the over-collected personal taxes and the need for more revenue and the relative size of the budget pie that we're attempting to allocate here. And I appreciate the respectful tone in which the amendment was offered and the discussion took place today, because it is a charged and volatile issue. I appreciate your handling of the issue, Mr. Chairman, and the respectful discussion that we had about the amendment.
Thank you very much, Senator Farrelly. The Legislative Fiscal Office has asked that we go ahead and assign for a full committee. I'll be happy to carry Senate Bill 259 to full committee, and to the Senate, Senator Farrelly, would you like to carry 259 to the Senate and to the House?
I'd be glad to. No, I don't probably represent the Crown for the election.
I would be happy to do it. I'll be happy to carry it to the full House at that point as well. So we'll go ahead and have those. We'll go now then to the work session on Senate Bill 260, which goes ahead and authorizes in statutes the provisions of the litigation, which have most recently been spawned by Vogel et al. Versus the State of Oregon Department of Revenue. Are there any comments relative to that? Representative Leonard is recognized.
I would move Senate Bill 260 to the full Ways and Means Committee to do staff recommendations.
Okay. Representative Leonard has recommended that we go with a do pass recommendation on Senate Bill 260 to the full Ways and Means. Is there any discussion?
It absolutely
needs to be resolved. Any objections? There being none?
You won't cut the checks.
So ordered, we will go ahead with Senate Bill 260 to the full Ways and Means with a do pass recommendation. As a carrier? To the full Ways and Means? Would you like to carry it, Representative Leonard?
We're happy to.
Representative Leonard would like to carry that, and Senator Troll in the Senate and in the House. Would you please do that, Representative Leonard? Thank you very kindly. We appreciate the decorum under which we have met today.
Do we have a roll call for this 260?
If we need a roll call, 4260, I heard no objections.
Okay, 260.
There were none objected, or none voiced. Everyone was shaking their heads the right way, Senator Lem. So,
thank you.
Okay. That does conclude our hearing for the subcommittee for the general government. Thank you very much.